bulb on here. So I was wanted to spend some time talking about this editorial job that you took on. As we've discussed briefly earlier, in some cases the editor of a book will be someone who just collects manuscripts from four or five or a dozen different people and kind of gives them a once-over and make sure they're on topic and puts them together and sends them off to the printer. But from what I gather, your editorializing job is a little bit more complex and more complicated, more thorough than that. So you were telling me about how you and your co-editor, I guess your co-editors, Todd,
yes,
and you.
Yes.
So describe that markup that you use with the text when someone brings the text to you.
Well, we published one book, or I published one book with a student, Richard Hughes, and John Todd contributed a chapter to that. That was our first book, and that was really written for graduate students.
Okay.
It came out in 1989, and that was the year in which Wolfgang Paul was awarded one-third of the Nobel Prize, along with Hans de Meldt, mm-hmm. and someone else whose name I've forgotten for the moment. The String of Pearls effect. Mm-hmm. So that was for graduate students, because the work was all over the literature on the Quadruple Lion Trap. Mm-hmm. And so we essentially pulled all of that together, gave an introduction to the theory, and put it out on the market for graduate students. And graduate students have been quite enthusiastic, mm-hmm. in the response. They come up to me and John in conferences and said, you know, I have a copy of your book and it's really good. I think I can understand it. All of us, not quite, but I'm getting close, mm-hmm. and it's helped a lot and so on. So that was excellent. Mm-hmm. We updated it. Bringing in mainly the cylindrical iron traps, which Graham had worked on, and the Cooks. Linear, Graham Cooks, yes, and then the linear iron traps produced by Thermo and by Sci-X. Mm-hmm. And the other books we were asked to write, and we decided on the format of inviting people that we knew from the principal iron trap laboratories around the world, if they would contribute to a book. So in 1993, I think, we were invited by CRC Press.
Ah, okay.
And so that's what we did. We wrote to about 40 laboratories. We had our order of preference, mm-hmm. But we wrote to 40, and I think we got something like 35 positive responses.
That's pretty good.
The only one which I really regretted not getting was an account of the use of the quadrupole iron trap for testing athletes during an Olympics, mm-hmm. and that was in France, and it was in the French lab wasn't interested at all. So we had about 35, 36. Well, that was too many, really. Mm. So we were faced with a problem. And there was a switchboard operator who helped us out. We could never reach anybody. And then an editor would die, another editor would be fired, another one would take a job somewhere else.
This would be the editor back at the book publisher.
At the book publisher, CRC Press, in Florida.
Yeah.
Baton Rouge, yeah. Baton or something, yeah. Anyway. Boca Raton, I think, yeah. It is. So it was this young lady who helped us out. So eventually it was decided this was much too much for one volume. We would do two volumes. No, it's probably too much for two volumes. So we produced three, those three there. Mm-hmm. Those are the volumes 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. alas, the backs have faded with the sun. Mm-hmm. But they were published, and shortly after them, we had an iron trap, ASMS iron trap meeting in Sanibel, thank you, in Sanibel. And we invited this young lady to come over and meet us, and we put her on a chair. She's a tiny little one. Mm-hmm. Put her on a chair, and we all cheered her.
She was the editor for these?
She was the telephone operator.
Telephone operator.
Yeah, she was the only one we could get. It's a terrible disorganized.
You have a chance to change here.
The editors would just change because various things. She was the link that we had. She is now an editor for us here, and richly deserves it. I mean, she's really very good. Anyway, Gary Glish and I were organizing this iron trap, and we got her, we put her on the chair so that everyone could see her, and we loudly applauded and then sent her back home with her mother. So that turned out to be quite interesting. We had a very good presentation from Franzen, Jochen Franzen, mm-hmm. who was interested in various aspects of iron trap. We had a conference at La Bennerie in France that Jean-Claude Tabé and I organized, and he was invited to attend, and he said, I'd love to attend. He said, could I present my theory on these resonances? And we said, yes. He said, how long do I have? I said, you can go from one meal to the other, but you cannot delay a single meal. The chef will not tolerate having his meals delayed. All right. So he started mid-morning, and he ended sometime before supper. But we had time for lunch. Mm-hmm. And he went about 2.5-3 hours, mm-hmm. In which he expounded the whole thing. We had discussion. This was really good.
Now, this is probably a group of, what, 50 people at the most?
Yes, I would say, 50 at the most. Yes, 45. Yeah, 40,
I think
45.
You know, smaller groups, intense smaller groups can be very productive.
Yes.
Much more so than these huge meetings.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Meetings. Huge meetings are not very good. So that was very good. And then I went to, where's the place in California? Near the golf club.
I know I've been there, but I can't remember it right now.
So all right.
Is there other...
It's the other place where they meet.
Sanibel on the east, and then they have this one on the west.
Yes. Coast. And I forgot.
Yeah, I know what it is.
This is called Palm Beach. It's near there. So went there, and I was trying to persuade George Stafford to write a book on the commercialization of the iron trap. Mm-hmm. It's a very dramatic story because it brings in these resonances and non-linear effects which are inherent in a commercial trap where we have finite electrodes and holes in the electrodes and so on. So it's got to come about. So there was George and with John Syker. George Paul Kelly had gone by that time.
S-Y-K-A.
S-Y-K-A. And, well, we must have discussed for an hour or so. And I said, George and John, you could have had half of it done by this time if you'd started when we first came out. I said, I'm getting cold, it's disappointing, and I can hear the other guys drinking beer and enjoying themselves inside. And I want to go in, but I want determined to get this thing. So I don't give up easily. So they agreed that George would assemble some slides. Mm-hmm. And that John would take these slides and then speak to them and then send me the transcript.
Oh, wow.
And the slides. Mm-hmm. Well, they did it. By this time, we had our house in France. Mm. And this was about 1992, 1993. So we're still in the stage of painting, and there were still not too many carpets, so we had this big dining living room, which shaped like a subway tunnel. And I sat there with my computer and this tape recorder, listening to John. Well, John said, well, we started off, I don't know what month it was, but I think it was perhaps early February, or was it late January, I don't know. And we decided, he rambled on. So I had to play every sentence six, seven times, try to make some sense, and then quickly write it down. And my wife could hear his voice. She hates his voice now. With a passion. She hates his voice. She met him in Baltimore, I think it was. She met him in Baltimore. Said, oh, yes, John! It's like, he knows about this. But he has that Eastern drawl. Yeah. Which just went. Anyway, it if you like to pass me the top book on this occasion. Yes.
Number three.
No, number one.
Two, and where's one?
There we are. Thank you. I give you this one back.
So you're saying this attempt to transcribe his notes from these three books?
No, not his notes, but this was ours. This was Franzen, non-linear iron traps, very long, but very good and proven to be on the whole correct. And then the commercialization of the quadrupole iron trap. John E.P. Syker. It says, small print, from a talk, The Geometry of the Finnegan Iron Trap, History and Theory, presented by the author at the 9th Asilomar Conference on Mass Spectrometry, September 1992. This chapter is a historical account of the problems, etc. Yes. So somewhere it tells of the recording, the wretched thing. But this is a wonderful story of science, of commercial venture. Mm-hmm. Puzzling over a problem, deciding what to do, setting a limit, and then the thing coming through. Mm-hmm. And producing, I think, the mass shift. And some of these things we still argue about, but they were very, very interesting, and it was a success.
But did that he? Did you transcribe all of that?
Yes.
That's in that chapter.
Yes.
Oh my, you're a glutton for punishment.
I thought it was such a great story because it really. This is the first major trap that's available to the mass spec community.
Right.
ICR is too expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to have to pay, I think we're paying $1.2 million for the Bruker FTICR.
Wow.
Yes. But it's the top of the range
that
we're getting. Everybody can't afford that.
Yeah.
But this was the start of the quadrupole iron trap, the linear iron trap, the cylindrical iron trap. Mm-hmm. And it, without it, life would have been very much different. And it was worth telling the story, mm-hmm. So you just stick with it. I mean, you get committed to something to the point where if you stop, there's too much of a loss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've got to go. So there we are. That was the beginning of this, and then we simulations and lots of other things. So we put together all of these, I think 35 chapters, or 34, I've forgotten the exact number.
In three volumes.
In three volumes, which we can handle easily. We had graduate students and postdocs contribute with their supervisor wherever possible. That's what we asked them to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is, we want to be able to say that we're training the writers of the next generation. and having them involved. Nobody was paid for it, but everybody got a complete set of three books.
Sure, that's nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
No money. You see, the publisher would only pay the lead author.
No.
And the lead author, if he wanted to give something to a student, he would get no tax remission for that. It didn't work. The free books worked splendidly.
Yeah.
And we did the same thing for the next two. The difference between these two is this was ion trap mass spectrometry.
Mm-hmm.
That's the quadrupole ion trap, although it doesn't say. And this is for trapped ion mass spectrometry. So this brings in the linear trap, ICR trap, and the orbi trap, all up and coming.
So now Todd is in the UK, right?
Yes.
So you're doing this editor collaboration at a distance.
Yes, but when we're working, I probably get 5-6 emails a day from him.
Okay, so it's the emails that
yes,
make it happen.
I can email at night, you see, and tell him, I got a problem, can you find this? When I wake up in the morning, he's been awake for 5 hours, so he's looked something up and sent it off to me.
Yeah.
Oh, it works well.
Yeah.
Much better than being in the same time zone.
Yeah, well, interesting. That only works good if you've got email.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, well, it makes a big difference, huge difference, yes.
But there's one thing that I was interested in having you describe is how the two of you would take a manuscript and review it and then send it back to the author to have him address the points. You use colored markers.
Yes. One, both edited.
So you both had to read the manuscript.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a lot of work.
Yes, but we understood a lot. I mean, I know a lot about this field now.
Yeah.
So both edited. Two, we had a color code.
Okay.
I'm green. John is yellow.
Oh, okay.
Blue means hold it. Read this. This is a concern, or something like that.
Okay.
And there was red for something else, and magenta for something else. But
so the highlights would reflect concerns, and he knew which author or which editor was complaining or saying the concern.
Yes. And the third point. What was the third point? Oh dear. Both edited. Color-coded. The third point has gone entirely. Gee whiz. Oh, if I took it upstairs to my computer, it would see REM1, JFJ1. And then REM1, JFJT2. And we might get up to RM6 and JFT9, if he makes a couple. And I have all of these on my computer, still.
So those are different versions.
These are the versions which have gone and come back from so the
process.
So there's the original, which would be, let's say, author 1. And then author 1, RM1, author 1, 2, that just tells us the sequence in which the things have been dealt with. So everything was above board. There was fairness. We would take a discussion, or we didn't say, it has to be this way. This is what we prefer, but it's for this reason. Can you have a little debate? Let's have a discussion about this. I don't think we ever had to get on the phone to argue a point, only to inquire if an author had died. We would get on the phone then, and I'd say, oh, I thought I'd better phone in case you had passed away. And I didn't want to be sending emails to disturb your wife if you had actually gone, you see. You think I'm dead? Why do you think I'm dead? Because you haven't replied. Yes, <I know. laughs>
Oh. another yeah. way of getting the author to move, move on.
And with John, sometimes he would go to sleep, he'll forget, or whatever. Anyway, he doesn't respond, so I would phone him up. And I hear his voice, for example, Mavis would say, "Ray, it's 2 o'clock in the morning." I said, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I calculated it the wrong way." Oh, I said, "Is John awake?" "Of course he's awake now." It wasn't nice, but I needed a response. Come on, come on. The ship is moving along.
Yes. Well, that's a lot of work. And that's a lot of work. That's impressive.
But they are good books, I can say, because all of the authors agree with what we have printed there. Mm-hmm. Yes, or what is printed there.
There's also all this issues of problems dealing with the placement of figures and getting the right figures together. And I don't know if you have to go through the business of getting permission that you took figures
previous
things. I mean, there's a lot of grit. Grammy
was.
Did CRC help you with that?
Well, they were reasonable, but we had to get permission, so we'd ask the authors to give us information or get permissions themselves and pass them along. If they were stuck, we didn't want to give anybody a reason to hold us up.
No, sure.
The thing has got to move and keep moving. If it has some momentum, that's what, if it stops.
Yeah.
People wonder if the thing's fallen apart, and that's
so. How long did it take from start to finish?
I think for these, for about 2.5 years, I'd say. I could look and find the original letter of invitation that we wrote, and if it comes out on this, I can go upstairs and look at it to the date of publishing these things. But I would guess about 2.5 years.
Yeah, yes. That's pretty good.
We had some disasters. One of the other books we had published, they published no figures, and then in another version they published all the figures, but no captions.
No way.
Yes, no captions. Yeah, that happened even with International Journal. The first time I submitted my figures electronically, they forgot to put the figures in. And so they said, "Well, we'll publish the figures, you know, together." I said, "No." I said, "I want the whole paper done as it ought to be done."
Yeah.
So they reprinted it.
Yes. Well, those are weird. You wouldn't think those kind of things would happen.
No, but Wiley, we were very disappointed with Wiley for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it had just gone to pieces.
Well, I know. For a fact that these editors go from one job to the next, they just don't seem to last very long.
No.
Why even bother having them? Unless they had a commitment to stay long enough, you've gotten done.
There was a good one at, dear. I wonder if you could. Yes, if you throw those things off and just pass me the top one. Thank you, I've forgotten his name. I don't know if it puts the editor here. It doesn't, you know. And it's interesting, the editor's name does not appear. James L. Smith. Yes. James L. Smith was the editor, and he was also the editor for this Barbara Findlayson Pitts and Jim Pitts. Mm-hmm. They did a very well-known book entitled Atmospheric Chemistry, mm-hmm. and he was the same editor. And I went to see him in New York to see if he would be at all interested in publishing, and I met him, we talked, and he was, and it came about. Mm-hmm. But that was very good. I see here there's a fellow. I went to France. I didn't really talk about this, but I went to France on leaves, small sabbatical leaves.
I was going to ask you about those. There were, I noticed you went several times abroad.
Yes, to Marseille particularly. We still have a new collaboration with Marseille. And I went back. I was an external examiner on several occasions. I read all their papers on iron traps and translated them and checked the translations with the people. Was that the right sense? And then there was a fellow here, a young postdoc called Malik, Alali Abdel Malik.
Oh my, how do you spell that?
Oh, it's A-L-I-L-I, that's Alali.
A-L-I-L-I.
And then Abdel Malik is A-B-D-E-L M-A-L-E-K. Abdel Malik. Now, he was just known as Malik, the last name shortened. And there were a number of Arab students there. It was a great joy to get to know some of the Arab students. Mm-hmm. And this Malik was quite well off, and his brother had a restaurant in Marseille. And he gave me that little Arab teacup on the top of the right-hand side teapot of the thing. Yes. Yeah, I just happen to see his name here. And there was a picture. Do you see a picture? There's a picture. A little painting, yes.
This one here.
Yes.
Very interesting.
He's trying to link up quadrupole ion trap, quadrupole mass filter, a mass spectrum, MALDI. These are Rydberg states of electrons. They did a lot of work on Rydberg species, cross-beam work. And this is done by a fellow called Georges Brancourt from Marseille. Mm-hmm. And he gave this to me just a couple of years ago. And it's a lovely little painting. These are the trees of Provence and the, what's the stuff called?
Cedars? Poplars?
No, the purple stuff is lavender.
Yes.
It's the fields of lavender
in
Provence. And you know, these days you have to produce a graphic abstract for papers.
Uh-huh.
Well, John Todd and I just finished this retrospective paper on the last 50 years of the quadrupole, and we sent this in as our graphical abstract.
Cute.
Got permission from George to do it. We thought it was the best. Imaginative.
What's George's last name?
Brancourt. B-R-I-N-C-O-U-R-T.
Okay. Speaking of lavender, there was an article in CN News where the European Union wants to have everything labeled with hazards. Possible hazards, and apparently some people may be allergic or have an allergic reaction to some of the compounds in lavender.
Oh, yes.
And the people who grow the lavender are up in an uproar about having their natural products, you know, listed as a chemical.
Yes.
This is a big, you know, fight between them is the way that they're going to follow the law.
Yes.
Everything's chemistry. This fellow that I mentioned about teaching K through 8 kids are getting interested in chemistry. When he gives a talk, he asks this audience of kids, where's the nearest chemical factory? And they say, oh, you know, there's one 5 miles down, there's Dow Chemical or refinery. He says, well, there's one that's closer than that. That's the guy sitting right next to you. Mm-hmm. Yes. The nearest chemical factory.
Yes.
You know? And unfortunately, chemistry has such a bad name that, you know, people kind of don't realize that it's all chemistry.
Yes.
So how many times did you go abroad? I mean, the first time we talked about that, you've been abroad doing more than several other occasions, both all the time to France?
I had the house for nearly 20 years in house. I was going to France and England about 3 times a year.
Oh, okay.
For a number of years.
Well, that's for extended stays? Or?
6 weeks, a month, weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. The shortest I did, I was going to show you the drawing of the synapt.
Ah, yes.
The synapt there's a new instrument where they take a washer with a small hole, and then another washer with a small hole, and another, so that these washers are arranged like this, and then a small hole here, and then you put RF onto these, that one, and that one, and another one, and then these three, so this is plus RF, and this is minus RF. So now you have opposite potentials on alternating washers. I call these washers. People don't like it, but they're washers. This then forms part. There may be 70 of these. Part of this synapt apparatus. It's called a... it's going to take too much time to find it. But this was... really discovered or developed at Waters, and I was on a I was an expert for them in a patent litigation, and this came up, and we had to fly back to Manchester to talk with the person who was doing this, and then fly back to Philadelphia. Where does Dow. Where is Dow? What's the town for Dow?
In the East Coast?
In the East Coast, near the East Coast. Yes,
Framingham?
It's near Philadelphia, but the town doesn't have an airport.
Oh, okay.
You know it?
No, I can't think of it. But...
No. It's an older, fairly well-settled town, very conservative town. Anyway, we had to fly there and back. So we got there the Sunday morning, worked on the Monday and Tuesday, and flew back Tuesday afternoon.
Great fun.
Man, that's not fun.
Yeah.
No. You get two... I was at odds with myself for a week.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
So I traveled to Britain. Of course, I had some... At Swansea, some leaves at Swansea, the Royal Society Research Unit, which is a tremendously good idea, because it's in the lifetime of a person only. We have centers of excellence in Canada, and these are establishments. They hire people and work, and then the older ones retire or go off somewhere else. But the center of excellence has to be fed, regardless of whether the people are good or bad. And they're not really as good as they started out with.
Yeah.
They always deteriorate. But the centers, research centers of the Royal Society in Britain, are created and then they die. Created and then they die. So I went to Bynum's.
Yeah.
One fantastic experience. Although Bynum is not the most nice of men.
Well, you ran a kind of a slave driver operation.
Yes.
There.
Yes, and not only arrogant but very insulting to some of his students and so on. I I wouldn't have stood for, if he had spoken to me the way he spoke to some of the students, but I would not have been there. And he knew that at the end. It was made very clear to him. So there, where else did I go? Well, Canterbury, Swansea, Jean-Claude in Paris, at Pierre Marie Curie University, and the group André Vidal, and the new ones now at Marseille. So we're just putting in for a new project at the moment between ourselves doing mass spectrometry and our partners in Marseille doing NMR on this problem of the proteins and the drugs and the competition on the proteins between drugs and contaminant molecules.
Okay.
There are a lot of unanswered questions in that area, but those have been my major collaborations overseas.
So let's talk about funding a little bit. Where did you get all this money?
I never get enough. I don't get a lot. And I never get enough. Money comes from, some came from NSERC, although since I've retired, they have become not very cooperative, and so I've been writing nasty letters to them.
That helps a lot.
They just have a new president of NSERC who takes office on November the 15th, and I wrote him a letter of welcome talking about the two solitudes. And he gave him a little lecture on what's happening, so probably won't hear from him. NSERC, CFI, that's more recent, Royal Society in Britain, some money. Scholarships for graduate students come from governments, either provincial or federal.
So you don't have to get funds to pay their salaries, that comes independently of the...
Yes, for some. If they do that, if they do some teaching in labs, they get paid for that. Otherwise, I'd have to top them up from NSERC. Postdocs are very expensive, and I've had very few in my time. Varian, of course, I worked for about 3 years as Varian's research center when they first decided to go into the iron trap business. They bought the rights from Finnegan, which became Thermo, and they bought the rights and went in, but they didn't have any expertise, so I worked with a fellow called Greg Wells, a physicist who was in charge of this program at Varian, Walnut Creek, and he was an absolutely charming fellow, a very, very capable scientist. And we had a very good time for 3 years. So I got a lot of money for that period, working with Varian. Yes, and that's about it.
But you don't feel like you were lavishly funded through your scientific career?
Oh, not at all. No, it was a mistake. Really, looking back, it was a mistake to try to do this type of research at a small university. I should never have tried it.
And I noticed that you do have a couple of patents. Were they, or I guess they were assigned to Varian or to the school?
Yes,
or,
to Varian.
So you did. Do you get any recompense from those at
all? Well, Varian bought them from me.
Okay.
Yes. So. Varian paid for the application, and then compensated the patent holders for the transfer to them. Okay. And then Varian sold them to Agilent when this business was sold to Agilent. Yes.
And those are patented both in Canada and the U.S.? Or
U.S. only.
U.S. only.
Yes.
Okay. So there is, I mean, a lot of times patents are granted, but they don't provide any remuneration.
Remuneration, yes. Well, the high-resolution one still hasn't been really developed. That still waits. I don't know. Do you know about resolution? You must know about resolution. The mass divided by the width at half height. Okay. There. This is M. And this at half height is delta M.
Mm-hmm.
And so the resolution R is equal to M over delta M. So as delta M gets more and more narrow, then the resolution increases.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are putting the ions out as we increase the RF voltage amplitude, and we could get it nothing. I'm plotting now the a value of the RF voltage, and then we increase it one small step, a fraction of a volt. And then the next one down here. All of the ions come out
in one spot.
One value of the RF. And so this...
How do you determine delta M?
Oh, it's just itsy a triangle. It's just
It's itsy-bitsy.
How do you mean itsy-bitsy?
Very small.
Oh, it's very small. Yes, so this is around 7 times 10 to the 6th. We had two IS slide made. Here's one. This would be 503, and this is 504. This is the C13 analog, and on a slide. If I was putting them on the same scale, this would be 7 meters.
Between the peaks.
Huge amount of empty space. But the ions have been all brought to the center slowly, and then they're waiting to about to become unstable as they reach the end of the stability diagram. And that just one more increment of the RF, and they all have time to fly out. And then it's the next thing, and there's none left.
They're all gone.
So this is, of course, scanning slowly.
Oh, yeah.
So when you scan slowly, the resolution increases and increases.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Schwartz did this, first of all. And then we followed it up and did that. That hasn't been utilized. There is a zoom in most quarter-pole ion traps, but it's really quite a small effect.
Mm-hmm.
So that patent still good.
Okay.
Payoff.
I think I've got a lot of information about the various people that you collaborated with and publications. Did you mention Jennifer Broadbelt?
Yes.
Was she a postdoc, a graduate student, or a student, or what?
When?
I know she's at University of Texas, Austin now.
This is Jennifer. I started about 1977 the Trent University. What was it called? Gas phase ion conference.
Oh, okay.
Okay, gas phase ion conference. Gas phase ions. And if you make a note and go to Trent University conference mass spectrometry, Google that, and you'll be taken, and you'll see pictures, and you'll see this picture, and some others.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going. I started in 77. And it's now in its, 36th year.
So Jennifer...
And so I wanted, this was for Southern Ontario.
Okay.
Okay. But there weren't very many. Southern Ontario meant John Stone at Queen's, John Holmes, myself, John Goodings, Harold Schiff, one or two others, and a fellow at McMaster, and that was it. So I asked some Americans. I invited Chris Wesdemiotis.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name you remember, and mm-hmm. Bob Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
All these people I met at NATO conferences, and Cooks, Graham Cooks, if they would like to send students. But the students, only graduate students could give a presentation. Mm-hmm. So don't send me a postdoc and expect to put them in. Graduate students only. And as they travel up, they could all have a look at Niagara Falls, stay overnight, and we would try to arrange reasonable accommodation, and we'd have a little closing dinner, but it would be cheap, and we'd look after it. It was done on a shoestring. But they came. So I met and got to know quite well some of the graduate students of these people, and Jennifer Broadbelt was one of the graduate students, of course, from Graham's.
From Graham's group.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I've known her now for 30 years, and she's not that old a person, so I've known her since she was quite young.
Yeah.
And we've collaborated in various ways, and we wrote this paper on mass spectrometry, NMR, and chemical computation. That was the thing. And she has written, I think, three chapters in these books in all. And I find her very good. I'm very supportive of her career. And she's a very hard worker.
Oh, yeah.
And I really appreciate what she has done. So that's how I get along with Jennifer.
Yes, now she's a
she's a big wig. Yes.
So, what do you consider your most?
I've been fighting this thing for a while. What do you consider your most critical, important publications?
Oh, golly. Well, I think the high mass resolution. High mass resolution, two or three with Greg Wells and Frank Laundrie, who was a student with me and still works for SciEx. So there's the high mass resolution. Secondly, really the one with Bonner, Durup, and March, that is the what I call collisional migration.
This is moving ions to the center of the trap?
Yes.
Okay.
We sent that paper in, and it was criticized. We responded to that, and then somebody came out with a paper saying this idea was ridiculous. They had their own interpretation of our things. And no sooner had their paper came out than De Melt and Neuhauser and somebody else presented a beautiful paper showing a cloud of barium ions fluorescing in the center, and then lower the pressure and excite them a little, and they disappear, and then bleed in a little helium, and they come back, and there's a tiny star in the center. It was marvelous. There was no further discussion from the other people, and they won't mention who they were. And the other one, the last one is changing, a competition for accommodation on whales. Whales, W-H-A-L-E-S. It's not entitled that, but that's... I had an argument with John Fenn. he was talking about flying elephants.
Right.
And I said, well, fly, an elephant doesn't relate to a protein molecule. Mm-hmm. You never really get one neutral and like that. I think it's a bad analogy.
Well, what do you think is better?
Whales.
Okay.
Because they're in solution, and and we're going to take them and fly them out. I have a slide of a whale leaping out of the water, you see, with showing that the barnacles and things attach to us. There's a competition here for drug molecules and contaminant molecules on the surface of this flying whale going through the gas phase. You see, that's so that's my paper. Anyway, that's that part that came out, I think, was the end of 2012, December the 31st, 2012, in IJMS.
So did Finn buy that? Or
No. He persisted in using, well, he'd already used that in his Nobel speech, so he didn't want to go back.
Yeah. No.
We were just fooling around, just having a discussion. Yeah. He was great fun, Mr. John Finn. The last few years were sad. He was mistreated and not really understood very well by his university.
Yes, well, dollar signs get in the way.
Oh, yes, alas.
Yes. Well, I don't know if you have any other comments you'd like to make at this point in time. We've covered a pretty good day's worth of discussion here of your career and its impact on the field. If you have any other words you want to...
Have we discussed Rosetta Project?
No.
Do you know Rosetta Project?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know if I recall exactly what that was about. Enlighten us here.
Yes. Could you pass for me the book at the left, the white one with the blue edge, and those papers just at your left elbow? Yes. All right.
Oh, I think I recall.
Yes. Yes.
About.
Yes. So, an iron trap too far. The Rosetta mission to characterize a comet. If you go to the web page of Trent University and you look for news, January the 30th, there's an explanation. It takes you right to a Wiley site where Wiley have put up that chapter, just chapter 9,
yes,
for anyone to copy and to read.
Is that website again?
That
Trent University website.
You'd have to go to trentu.ca. Trentu is one word, .ca. And that would take you to Trent University. Mm-hmm. And then you want news.
News.
And you'd have to go scroll back through the news to January the 30th of this year.
Okay.
And that will tell you about Rosetta Comet Project. And that was when the comet was woken up and it spoke to the world. Now, it took off in 2004, March 2004. We published this chapter in 2005. And if the thing had crashed, nobody would ever have seen this chapter because we would never have mentioned it. I mean, only those who had the book would have known. But it has woken up. It sent a test mass spectrum back, and it has in it a quarter-ball iron trap.
And Rosetta stands for the...
It doesn't stand for anything. It's the stone.
It's a space probe to go to a comet.
Yes, and it is trying to understand the comet, and it's looking at its isotope ratios for carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and the comet is 4,600 million years old.
Which is... How do they know that?
I have no idea.
Well, I know that they suppose that it has never come through the solar system before.
Yes.
So from that aspect, I guess, I don't know. It's been out there for a long time.
It's been out there for a long time, and these isotopes would not change during that time, so it takes us right back to gives us a T value for these isotopes. And what was the other point I was going to say? Gives us that. Plus, When I tell people about this, I say, what do you think the shape of the comet would be?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And I've seen Halley's Comet. Mm-hmm. I've seen Halley's Comet here. You look through field glasses, and it's round and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. And that's all I could see. It seems to have an atmosphere all around it. But we'd expect it to be spherical, perhaps, with ablation, perhaps a tail end, so it's become more elliptical, mm-hmm. and it's flying that way. Actually, this one looks like a duck. It's like a duck. There's a head, comes round, and then a back. And they had to choose a landing spot.
So we're going to land on this comet.
November the 12th.
And this is October the...
27th.
So 2 weeks.
For 16 days. 2 weeks, Wednesday, in fact.
Wednesday, wow. Yeah.
2 weeks on Wednesday.
And it's your ion traps going to be measuring the isotopes.
That is the isotope. It's a copy. The proposal was formulated 20 years ago.
Yeah.
This part hasn't changed, but nevertheless, it's there and it's working. I mean, it's actually sent
a mass spectrum back,
yes. And it has gas and things. These aren't... that's the... The thing. And it explains there are 20 experiments. Yeah. 11, there are two parts to this. This is the orbiter. This has the big mm-hmm. solar panels on it. And this is the lander. And so they've been together for 10 and a half years.
Yeah.
And they have sent stuff back. It takes 50 minutes to say hello and to get an answer back. 50 minutes at the speed of light. Uh-huh. And so on November the 12th, they're going to fire this down to the comet. And as it hits, it should trigger four explosions of spikes in each corner, which will be driven into the ice to hold it.
Okay.
And then the 9 series of experiments will commence.
Okay.
So 11 are done with the orbiter and 9 with the lander. Presumably most of these 11 have been done by now.
Yeah.
Because it's been flying around the comet since about August.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to stay tuned to the news.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So then basically the data from the lander will be transmitted to the orbiter, which will then eventually be sent back to the...
Goes back to the European Space Agency, and if you wanted information, the European Space Agency's Y-S, Rosetta. That takes you to a page where it oodles and oodles of information. But it's run by the European Space Agency. The people who are actually interested in the ion trap experiments per se, the group at Open University in Britain.
What's the name of that?
Open University.
Open.
OPEN, the Open, as opposed to closed, mm-hmm. the Open University.
That's a name. Does it mean open?
Open, yes.
I mean, it's an open university.
It's an open university, yes. It's a new concept. I don't think it's in practice. It's been going along. I think it is. It's become normalized in with the rest.
Okay.
Yes. It's very difficult to stay different for long.
Yes, yes.
There are penalties.
Well, that's an interesting topic on which to conclude today's work.
Yeah. Yes. So when this was sent in, they had to include a list of the ages of the proposal members because the committee wanted to know if there would be anyone left when this thing got there. Anybody there who knew what to do? And alas, Colin Pillinger, who was the leader, died in July or August. It was
P-I-L-L-I-N-G-E-R. So he's the leader, but it's gone. He's no longer with us.
No, he has gone.
That is an interesting request.
And they're going to do isotope ratios, which are the thing. So.
It's very nice, very nice.
There we are.
Well, is there any other items you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I put these things together. There's a book there we haven't discussed. I had a very good student from Brazil. The idea was he'd do his research with me and write his thesis in Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And he had a Portuguese professor who was prepared to sponsor mm-hmm. that. And
this is a book that he published.
This is a book that he published, but we are the authors. He and I and another fellow who unfortunately died shortly after.
Andre,
yes. So I've been twice to Brazil, and I was there last December.
Mm-hmm. And this is on iron traps.
And on iron traps, yes. Nice. So it spreads the message around. I had a very good visit. Oscar was as the heart of a lion. He played fullback for our rugby team. Oh. We have a rugby team here. when I first came to Peterborough, I played rugby.
Oh my. That's
once.
Kind of like, you don't want to do that too often.
But I played hooker in the middle, and I was playing for Toronto Scottish and came here. The ground was terrible. That was my first visit to Peterborough. But Oscar was a fullback, and he's smaller than I am. I mean, he's less tall. And yet he will tackle anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody with the ball, he will tackle and bring him down. Yes. Enormous courage. Yes,
courage.
Yes, yes. Well, he's one of the two. The other one is a friend of mine who still lives in Peterborough, and he was a pilot, and he trained on aircraft like the Harvard, and then Canada bought jets. What were they called? It began with a V. Damn. Vikings, something like that. They bought about 72 of these jets, the first jets. And it was a turbine, a fuel tank, stubby wings, and that's it. There was tiny space. There was no trainer. The chipmunk was two, and that is two people.
Okay.
One after the other, tandem. But in his day, you went from that to your a vampire. It was the first trip in a vampire. And not everyone made it. But he went up, he said he was like being kicked in the back and took off, and all of a sudden you found yourself, 1,500 feet, going like hell, and you had to turn around. And he said, I came back and I saw the runway, and I came down and down and down, and I was going to land or crash, but I wasn't going to go around again. And he landed. I mean, tremendous courage to do that.
They hit this puppy on the ground and leave it there.
Yes, yes. But we lost a lot of fighters, of pilots with them, yes. Anyway, that's just some of the interesting people that I've met.
Very good. Well,
okay.
Shall we call it a day?
Yes.
All right, we'll push the off button here.